You're listening to the Borderliners Podcast, where we interview peripheral characters from the fringes of Israeli society and show you a different side to life in the Holy Land. Subscribe using your favorite podcatcher or visit us online at borderlinerspod.com. And now, the interview.
Welcome back to the Borderliners Podcast after a 10-month break since we last spoke to Eli Shabbos. We are recording in our new format. We're using the excellent technology provided by cleanfeed.net, which was recommended thanks to the good people on the podcasting subreddit. It's quite good technology. So I am remotely interviewing my usual co-host, Nina Rabinowitz, and that's the second change of format, is that the interview subject, the borderliner,
the guest,
the borderliner for today's investigation is Nina Rabinowitz herself. So welcome to the podcast, Nina.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here on the other side of the questions.
You are the object of ridicule instead of the ridiculer.
Yes, that is me.
So it's been a long 10 months, and I guess the biggest cause of that and the biggest cause of the social awkwardness that you can detect in our strange laughs is the coronavirus pandemic. So we've crossed an interesting bridge for people listening from outside of Israel. The vaccination program has just begun officially with the prime minister and now the over 60s and the healthcare workers. But Nina happens to be not only the Borderliners podcast co-host, co-founder, co-creator, but also a student of epidemiology and public health at Tel Aviv University. So Nina was in prime position to give perspective on what's going on. I'm happy to be talking to a human. It doesn't have to be you. It can be anyone, actually. So I share in your happiness. So Nina, what I thought would be interesting, just to some of the things you have said through your Facebook have been very interesting. So I want to pick up on a few of those, and I've been kind of in coronavirus. I have blogged about this on my own Medium channel. I've been in coronavirus news moderation mode, essentially, since it's begun. So I have been commenting on some of your posts and kind of missing others. I haven't been delving too much, and thus I'm relatively underinformed about the whole corona pandemic, actually. I'm simply waiting for the news bulletin to say that the pandemic is over and that the post-corona party is happening. And of course, in Jerusalem, being such a bustling metropolis, there will certainly be a mass corona party. That's beyond doubt. So, but one of your recent comments, Nina, has been that the vaccines, firstly, you have some interesting thoughts about the vaccines themselves, which we'd love to get into, but you actually think that we could have reached a point of containment without vaccines.
Yeah, so I understand why governments, you know, put all this money, time, effort, this massive investment into developing vaccines. They're great technologies, so I get it. The thing is, had we had the perspective from the beginning that actually vaccines aren't necessary, or that we weren't going to rely on a vaccine, we would have invested maybe the money that they put into vaccines, or maybe the money that they put in, or maybe other money into proper testing. And then, of course, obviously following up testing with isolation and measures if necessary. So right now, the quote-unquote gold standard, although it's really a shit standard, is the PCR test to confirm whether you have COVID-19. I mean, even the creator of the PCR test said that it's not meant to just be used just for mass testing. It's supposed to be used if someone has symptoms. But if we had developed proper testing that had really good true positive rate, obviously nothing's perfect, but we just wouldn't be in this mess. Now, obviously, hindsight's 2020, which is appropriate for this year, I guess.
And it's been a very, very long and painful lockdown here. So when it began in February, we're now on, this is the second lockdown that we're in, right? And for people not in Israel, so we're currently recording this at one of the effects of prolonged social isolation beyond the feeling of rapidly impending insanity is a warped sense of time. So what time is it? It's December. Christmas is fast approaching. I'm going to gamble that it's the 20th of December. Now I'm going to check my calendar.
Actually, the 20th of December is my birthday.
I was 3 days off, but I was close. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's been 10 months. Yes, it was your birthday recently, but it's been 10 months like this of people very much cooped up. So currently the bars and the restaurants are closed. The gyms remain closed. Only a very small percentage of stores remain open at this time. So that comes with, and that's come with a high price to the economy, as well as the kind of political turmoil that we're seeing unfolding here. So you think that this, to an extent, could have been minimized if there was better testing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, certainly minimized. You know, we could make... obviously, you can't say right now because it didn't happen, and so we don't know. But hypothetically, we could not be really having cases at all. Do I think that would have happened? No, I'm sure we would have made a bunch of mistakes anyway.
But about this whole idea of the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine that was brought and which is currently, as I said, being inoculated to the at-risk people. That's from what I understand, at least the healthcare workers and those above 60, and then they're going to gradually mm-hmm. work their way through the population. So you recently said on your Facebook wall that vaccines are not safe, that some people are saying that vaccines are totally safe, and you're saying this is a fallacy. So what's the deal there, Nina? You don't think they're safe?
So it's actually, first of all, I just want to clarify, I'm not anti-vax. I'm very much pro-vaccine.
You're anti-vax.
Everyone says I'm anti-vax.
That's why we brought you on the podcast.
Yeah, legit. I've gotten silenced already, so I feel like that does make me a borderliner. In reality, I'm not anti-vax. Feel free to call me that if that makes me more of a borderliner. I'll take it. But basically, so I'm not anti-vax. Vaccines are really wonderful technologies, and this is for, you know, the regular vaccines we've had up until now, but still there's no such thing as a vaccine without risk. Just because they're great technologies and just because they're amazing for public health and just because the odds of you having any adverse effects from a vaccine are low, that doesn't mean that they're risk-free. But that those are just typical DNA vaccines, right? This vaccine that we have, the Pfizer, Moderna, so they're mRNA vaccines, and so they don't work in the same way that typical vaccines do. So basically, because it's a new technology, everyone's like, great, it's a new technology. We don't have to be worried about the same risks that we have with other vaccines. So that is true to some extent. We don't need to worry about the same things that we worry about with other vaccines. You know, we're not going to worry about accidentally giving someone, putting the actual virus in the person's body mm-hmm. and exposing them. We're not worried about that because there's no actual virus in this vaccine. But there are other adverse effects that we might see. We just don't know. And even though we did test enough people with the vaccine, we haven't tested them for long enough. We didn't exactly cut corners, but we didn't put proper safety measures in place that we typically put with other, certainly new medical technologies. Yeah, so those were kind of there, but they weren't really, we were very short-sighted in that there could still be effects that show up that, we didn't anticipate. And, you know, my hope is that there's nothing serious, but, you know, you never know. And I don't think, my grandmother is getting the vaccine. I think she should get it. I mean, she's old. She just wants to be able to live her life normally. And statistically, the odds of her having any issues are slim. Like, I think it's worth it for her. But I don't think that enough people are informed about the reality of this is more of a risk than we would normally take because we don't know what the risk is, basically. And you have to be comfortable with not knowing what the risks are long term.
And I think that kind of discomfort is really being felt at the moment. So just one of the recent comments on your Facebook post from Rivki Leibovich here says, energetic, she's saying that, you know, energetically, people are disturbed by this information. That's creating a lot of confusion, a lot of sort of distrust that maybe isn't healthy, but it is very difficult for people just to live with this reality that we, you know, need to take a vaccine that isn't necessarily 100% safe. That's kind of an uncomfortable but necessary position. And I guess I would have to agree that just the kind of energetic footprint of that in society is quite disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general we have some bad energetic footprints that have been left just from having this whole thing. I mean, how much do you trust governments, you know, even just to make good policy decisions? I mean, I don't have the same trust in governments. There are many people who I don't think I'll be friends with again after this because they've just gone crazy. I haven't had so many experience. I mean, I've had many experiences, I guess, that have been like really wonderful over this thing.
When you say the people have gone crazy, what kind of thing are you talking about?
Well, for example, I don't know if this is relevant, but I was in a WhatsApp group with a bunch of friends, and one friend decided that it was her place to silence me because I am a borderliner, I guess. But yeah, so that was one thing. I mean, people have just been, I've gotten on the street, I can't even tell you how many times I've gotten people be like, wear your mask. And I'm like, there's no one around. And like, there's no reason to be wearing a mask when you're outside. Certainly when no one's around. Yeah, and I've actually had to tell people like, listen, I'm an epidemiologist, I work in the field, like you don't need to wear a mask. And if anything, it's more dangerous for you to be talking to me while I'm not wearing a mask and telling me to put on my mask than you just keeping quiet. So yeah, people have gotten a little crazy, I would say.
And what's your personal corona practice been up to now? Have you been kind of socially? I describe myself as being among the coronavirus extremists recently. I'm trying to find a suitable name to describe people that really have refrained very much from socializing. But it sounds like you're saying that I think you've drawn a very sharp distinction between outdoor and indoor socializing. And would you say that outdoor socializing is safe with masks, without masks? What's your take on that?
Okay, so basically the likelihood of you getting corona in an outdoor setting versus an indoor setting, the relative risk is like about 18 times more likely to get it while indoors compared to outdoors, right?
Okay.
Now, there's many ways to say that you could say like, well, you know, like, is it statistically significant? Is there enough power? Like all these statistical things. But what you should know is that in epidemiology, we don't see that kind of number for like a relative risk or an odds ratio. We don't see that. 18 times more is like unheard of. Like I had once had a homework assignment that it was something was 9 times more likely compared to the control. And someone asked, do we even, like, is this realistic? And the teacher was like, of course not. Like, this doesn't happen. So, yeah. So the fact that it's like 18 times less likely to get it outdoors means something. And so I think that like now it's winter, so it's going to be harder. But the best thing we could have done was just get as much outdoor time as possible, make things outdoors. I mean, I would love if schools were outdoors, but I don't know if that'll necessarily come to fruition, especially since it's winter, you know, it requires a whole different setup. Mm. So basically I'm not so worried about outdoors. And my practice has been, you know, I don't go to big gatherings. I went to one wedding that was, you know, a small number of people. It's okay to be near other people, I think, especially if it's for your sanity. I think it's really important.
So Nina, in terms of, Israel's approach to the coronavirus was these long lockdowns. What have you thought about that in general?
So I don't want to say that lockdowns don't work because they do, but they also have negative consequences. And the trick with having a lockdown that works is when you come out of it, you maintain good you know, policies and measures that people will actually follow and actually help. So lockdown on its own is effective. We're at the point where lockdown isn't really necessary. Unfortunately, I do think that schools do need to be shut down because they are the source of the spread, and they're just not, they don't have the capacity to, and they're just not testing all these kids. And so even though maybe most kids aren't going to actually get sick, first of all, they may have long-term symptoms, syndromes really, but also they're spreading it to other people, including the elderly who are getting sick and some are dying. And yeah, so even though, you know, we have good treatment measures, it's still, we don't want all these people to be sick. And then especially with the long COVID syndrome, which we can also talk about, this is going to have a large cost to the economy long-term that people are just not considering. And now a quick word from our sponsors.
From Titus to Trump is a dazzlingly original political analysis by public affairs consultant Yaakov Greenspan. In it, Greenspan investigates how great Jewish leaders, including those in modern Israel, have managed relations with pivotal figures on the international arena. Greenspan contends that the relationship with President Trump is the best relationship that the Jewish state has had with a sitting U.S. president, tearing apart the arguments of the left-wing naysayers. This is a must-read work for anybody interested in gaining a deeper understanding of the U.S.-Israel relationship. Available in ebook and paperback format on Amazon.com.
And what this is, the long COVID syndrome?
What this is, the long COVID syndrome. So the long COVID syndrome is, it is basically people that have COVID either for the long term, or they had COVID and they kind of recovered, but they're not back to themselves. They're having these long-term symptoms like, you know, exhaustion, brain fog, depression, anosmia, which is the inability to smell. And then there's like also like, I think blood, let me look this up. You have increased risk of stroke or clot. So some people have fatigue, shortness of breath, cough, joint pain, chest pain, muscle pain or headache, faster pounding heartbeat, loss of smell or taste, memory, concentration or sleep problems, rash or hair loss.
Oh my goodness.
Typically the damage caused from COVID is heart, lungs, and brain. And yeah, blood clots and blood vessel problems, problems with mood and fatigue, a lot of, and these are just what we know. I mean, there might be other things that show up later. And it's possible that all these people, it's just taking longer for their symptoms to clear up. It's also possible these are, you know, permanent chronic conditions that these people have to deal with. And I think while we have a tendency to focus on just the deaths, because like many would say that is the worst outcome of COVID. But in reality, it's we have to look at quality adjusted life years. And, you know, if this knocks off 10 years of your life, that's significant. So maybe it won't be the equivalent of one person dying, but it'll be the equivalent of three people having bad days more often than not for the rest of their lives. Mm. We don't know.
Wow. So Nina, if you were appointed the Corona Tsar, as they keep calling the Corona person,
the Tsarina.
Tsarette. If you were appointed in that capacity, managing the COVID response, what would you be doing differently?
Well, definitely investing in better testing. That's number one. I would certainly inform all of the police and border patrol that there is no reason whatsoever to be fining people who are not wearing a mask outdoors, as long as they're not in a crowded area and they're not like screaming. I think honestly we should have been, there are a lot of people, listen, I don't know if this is even feasible, a lot of people are out of work now. We could continue to just give them unemployment money. Apparently a lot are not wanting to go back to work because unemployment is easier to get, but what would be smart would be using all these people to be able to process tests, and any brain power on inventing better testing and making it more available and performing the testing. And then, you know, good isolation measures. We've actually been pretty good with our isolation measures. I feel like that was a mouthful to say. Isolation measures. Like, did I say that right? Yeah, I think I wouldn't allow kids in school unless there was good frequent testing. And that's also a blow to the economy in the short term, because I don't know what the numbers are, but let's say like 80 to 90% of women here work, and like while their husbands are also working. So we have a, like, our workforce is really necessary for our economy. And parents that have to be home alone with kids or have to be home with kids is a blow to the economy. But I believe it is necessary as long, if we don't have proper testing. And then also just get everything as much as we can outdoors. We should have been doing this, you know, as soon as it warmed up, and we should have been doing it all summer. Yeah, I mean, listen, we were better off than other countries because we are more outdoors, among other things. But yeah, I think we should have been outdoors. And again, I don't know if we would be in this mess to the same degree. You know, certainly when we had the lockdown over the holidays here, people should have been encouraged to be outside as much as possible. It was definitely better than the first lockdown when they were just like, don't go outside because you could get it. And now they know that you're not going to get it by being outside. So people should be outdoors as much as possible. But yeah, we should have promoted like everything being outdoors.
Okay. And the last, I mean, I guess the question that I think people are starting to think about as the kind of end to this pandemic sort of starts to become in sight is whether this could happen again. So a lot of people are also wondering, I mean, how did this come about in the first place? So I remember hearing about this in February, and you know, I know there have been a few. I mean, do you think this kind of thing could happen again? And you know, in terms of how we got here exactly?
So there's no way to know, because we aren't really investigating how this happened in the first place. I'll tell you the evidence. The way that I've looked at it, that people are really resistant to hearing this, but the evidence does point to the fact that the virus was kind of put together in a lab using other viruses, and then that accidentally escaped. I don't think anyone thinks that it was like bioterrorism, but there's just so much evidence for it. If you look at it, it's just the most parsimonious explanation of what happened.
This is a competing theory to the idea that the virus kind of was transmitted through a wet market.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say, in China, they've already said, yeah, it wasn't from a wet market. The reason why they had to say that was because it wasn't even bat season in the market. And we know that the majority of this virus probably comes from a bat. Besides the fact that, like, okay, I'll just give you the easiest explanation for why it probably came, it accidentally escaped from a lab. Basically, there are very few labs in the world that look at bat-borne coronaviruses, okay? But one of the few happens to be in Wuhan. So that alone is like, that's a strange coincidence, right? And then, so the predominant theory was that the virus jumped from a bat to a human being having something to do with the wet market in Wuhan, right? That was what the Chinese government was saying for a while. And then that story had to be recalled, if that's what you say about a story, because it wasn't bat season in that market. And like the closest horseshoe bats, which is the bat that it came from, were hundreds of miles away. So it's just highly unlikely that the market in Wuhan, which is where the SARS-CoV-2 first emerged, that was the source of it. By the way, I just want to clarify for everyone listening. So the virus didn't come because someone ate a bat. The initial theory was that the virus jumped from a bat to humans in a wet market, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was because a human being ate a bat that was infected with the virus. It just, viruses jump from between animals all the time, and wet markets are dangerous because there are so many animals and viruses mutate very quickly, and so it could easily jump, a virus mutation could easily jump from one animal to the next. And so these wet markets are breeding grounds for these types of things. However, I still don't believe, and even the Chinese government has admitted, that this mutation of the virus SARS-CoV-2 happened at the wet market. The Chinese government also said that it didn't come from the lab, but they didn't give an alternative explanation for where they think it came from. So, yeah, I mean, we all know that China is scary. So the Chinese government, I want to clarify, not Chinese people, but the Chinese government is scary and they hide things. And we also know that the last round of swine flu that was going around in, I think, was it 2012? That was an accidental lab leak also. So this isn't unheard of. And yeah, we just don't know. There are other pieces of evidence that point to it being leaked from the lab, but they require intense biological knowledge. But basically, you wouldn't see these. It's just unlikely that this didn't come from a lab at this point. Not impossible, but unlikely.
Okay. And Nina, if people wanted to learn more about you besides being the Borderliner podcast co-host, you also believe you've written a book.
I have written a book.
What is your book called?
It's called Triumph by Trepanation. It's about my mental health story over the course of being diagnosed and treated for a brain tumor.
Oh my
and
goodness.
How somehow the brain surgery seemed to kind of eliminate all my mental health problems that I was having, that I was struggling with.
Okay. Do you have a website?
I do have a website, ninarabinowitz.com. And that's ninarabinowitz.com. And yeah, you can reach out to me there. I'm on Facebook. I am trying to convert my Facebook posts to Medium posts, Medium articles. So I'm also on Medium. And I guess I've been taking a hiatus from Instagram and all those other channels because, you know, the machine. So yeah, but yeah, you can reach out. Best is the website or maybe Facebook, but those are all options.
We look forward to hearing more about your thoughts on the have you any other thoughts to share about the coronavirus?
Oh, I did want to mention the most important thing that I want people to be aware of is that most governments, most individuals, you know, organizations, and even doctors, like medical doctors who have a degree, they don't understand the science and they don't understand how to read the science. And so I'm not all of them. I'm sure there are many MDs that have a good understanding of statistics and, you know, even studied epidemiology. And so they understand what's happening, but many people do not. And unfortunately, governments and policymakers really seem to have shown that they are unable to understand the science, and therefore they're making these policies that don't make sense and don't help us get out of this. So, you know, thank God they invested in a vaccine. Thank God they seem to care, but I don't know how much you should really trust. Basically take everything that anyone says to you with a grain of salt is my advice, and okay, look into it yourself. And if you have questions about how to read a scientific article or something like that, you can reach me and I will hopefully look into it for you.
You can reach Nina through Nina Rabinowitz, and you can buy salt for taking coronavirus information with through Shoe for Sal, Rami Levy, or your local McCullough.
Yeah, we should link to get an Amazon affiliate code for salt and put it on the episode's website.
Okay, well, thank you, Nina. It's been a pleasure having you here on this unique episode of the Borderliners podcast. Not only a remote interview, but actually a interview of the originator. We would like to thank cleanfeed.net. If you are also looking for a technology solution to record a podcast with a remote guest interview, then check out cleanfeed.net, which has served us very well over the course of the last 40 minutes. And if you want to hear more about the Borderliners podcast, including our previous three episodes with a musician, a cat enthusiast, and a former retired bamboo purveyor, then you can check out borderlinerspod.com or find the podcast on all your favorite podcatchers, including Podcast Republic. No, we're not on, sorry, that's an Android app. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and elsewhere. Until next
and YouTube.
Time. And YouTube. We also have a YouTube channel. Until next time.
Wait, are there other sponsors we need to mention?
I don't believe we have been so so fortunate, but you can correct me.
Oh, what about that book, that other book?
Oh, we did have a previous episode sponsor, and just because we know that local small businesses and, you know, small authors are going through tough times, we will generously give another sponsorship spot to Yaakov Greenspan. And actually, I did see, because I get that newsletter, that not only has he come out with a book, From Titus to Trump, there's also a book, I'm just trying to remember the name, Just Get on That Plane, an intriguing book from everything I've heard about making Aliyah, moving to Israel. So if you're looking for an overview of that, then check that out. Not many books have been written about Aliyah, and I guess coming from such a controversial author, I mean, Ellie said he'd read From Titus to Trump. I haven't read the book, but it sounds like some pretty interesting ideas in there. So check out, that is Just Get on That Plane by Yaakov Greenspan. Thanks to our guest, Nina. Thanks to everybody who contributes, actually, to Nina's Facebook wall. Very interesting commenters. I'll let you do the outro, because I have failed in my previous attempt.
Thanks for listening to the Borderliners podcast. If you know of any borderliners that you would like to be on interviewed on this show, please hit us up and follow us on all social media channels. Yeah, once we get monetized, you know, we don't no longer need to be doing sponsored advertisements. So just remember to like, share, and subscribe. Is that a good outro?
Sounds good.
Okay. Awesome.